You're listening to a Bucks Plus audio production on the Bucks Plus Network.
Your weekly pulse on the Milwaukee Bucks, straight from a Bucks legend. This is Here District with Marcus Johnson, alongside his son and 1995 NCAA champion, Chris. Here's MJ.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to the Fantastic Voyage. I'm the captain of this vessel, Captain Marcus Johnson. Captain Johnson, as we speak. I got my first mate, Chris Johnson. What's up, Chris?
What's up, MJ?
How you living? Everything good?
Everything's gravy.
Everything is good. Everything's beautiful. And we are, again, I always say this, I'm getting redundant, but we're always, you know, proud and privileged. But this young man, I guess I can say that, it's all about perception and perspective. This very young man is an outstanding writer for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. It used to be the Journal when I played. We had the morning paper, the Sentinel. Bob Wolf covered the team then. Then we had the Journal was the afternoon evening paper, and that's when we had Tom Enlin and a bunch of really, really great writers. But they combined the two. When did they merge? Jim Ozarski, when did they merge, Jim? How long ago was that? First of all, welcome to the Fantastic Voyage.
What
welcome
up, Jim?
Welcome to Here District.
Jim!
You can see how easily I digress and kind of get off track. But when did those two papers merge?
Oh, my do you know? Goodness.
Do your homework. Do your homework, Jim, before you come on this show. Do your homework before you come on this show, man.
We can get into point forward, but I don't, you know, it was late 80s, I want to say.
Late 80s, all right.
Late 80s.
Okay. Well, but you do an outstanding job, and you know, and I don't say that lightly, Chris, because, you know, I'm always picking the brains of, you know, Jim and Eric Name, and they just – you know, I'm glad they weren't around when I played, because they would have been snooping through my trash and all that stuff like some of the reporters back in the old days used to do, trying to find out stuff. You know,
legendary, real journalism,
real yellow journalism back in the day. But Jim doesn't practice that. He keeps it above board. He keeps it legitimate. But man, we got to jump right into it.
With the 23rd pick in the 2024 NBA draft, the Milwaukee Bucks select A.J. Johnson from Fresno, California, and Australia's Illawarra Hawks of the NBL.
The Bucks draft. And let me just tell you my perspective, because when the Bucks drafted A.J. Johnson, first of all, love the last name. You don't have to call me Ray. You can call me A.J. or Ray J., but you don't have to call me Johnson. But I digress. But again, when I heard that name, A.J. Johnson, you know what my first reaction was, Jim?
Uh-huh.
You know what it was?
I imagine it was,
or who? Oh,
okay.
What? What the hell? John Horse? What? Huh? Is he, did he go in a time machine and hang out with me back in the 80s? What is he on? You know, AJ Johnson? Who the
right.
heck is, who? And then I read, so I said, okay, well, and how do you pronounce that Australian team, Chris, Jim, that LaMelo played for? What's the name of the team he played for?
Illawarra?
Illawarra?
Illawarra? Yeah, okay. The Illawarra.
Sounds about right.
Yeah, it's way, way, way too many, like, consonants in there. And, like, you know, so, but Illawarra. And uh-huh. So I looked up his numbers, and he averaged a whopping 2.8 points per game.
Right.
8 minutes per game. 29% of his three-point shots, you know, a low volume, just over 1 3-point field goal attempt per game. 54% from the free throw line. I'm like, wow. You know, so I said, well, you know, maybe LaMelo had comparable stats. Going over there as a young player, let me look up LaMelo's stats. LaMelo, 17 points, 7 assists, 5 rebounds. I mean, played really, really well against grown men. And so I was a little flummoxed, to use the term. And then, you know, you start doing a deeper dive and you start finding out more about this young man. And then the thing that always sells you or doesn't sell you is looking at the film. You know, let's go to the tape. So I watched the tape, and man, you know, I see a lot of potential. But Jim, talk about the process, how you found out. I mean, when did you find out, and what you know about this young man from Fresno?
Yeah, well, it's interesting. You know, I covered the NFL for half a dozen years too, guys, and the reason I say that is the drafts for these things, for us in the media, is very much like the fan experience. We are not allowed in the facilities. We are not allowed in war rooms. Yeah. We are watching on TV, legit like everybody else. So Obviously, you know, if you're kind of plugged into folks, but again, it's draft day. Generally, the people you speak to or trade messages with are busy in that moment. And there's so much paranoia about their guy and not wanting stuff to get out. So AJ Johnson, you know, look, the Bucks did meet with him at the combine. I mean, that's one of those sort of mass media spots, right? Where, you know, agents kind of talk up their guy. You kind of hear who met with whom, but you never know, you know, how those interviews go or anything like that. So AJ met with them at the combine in Chicago. He participated in the combine, so you got to see him a little bit there. And you know, in terms of
how did he look? How did he look at the combine?
We don't get to see a ton, Marcus. Like, there's still some, like, the individual events that they participate, some scrimmaging. I'll be honest, Marcus, like, that was, if I saw him, because, I mean, you really weren't looking at, like, Tyler Smith makes sense. Like, he was sort of in that boat, you know, some of the bigs at 23. Tyler Kolek from Marquette, who ended up going to the Knicks. I don't know if at that time, Marcus, I was thinking the Bucks would go 19-year-old developmental project at 23, sure, had they kept the pick. So, it was a surprise to a degree. You started hearing AJ's name as a potential selection there the day before, so Tuesday. You know, the Athletic mocked AJ Johnson at 23, so something really kind of bubbled up there in the 24 hours before the pick. But even then, you know, you mentioned the who. Look, he went to Australia for a year, and unlike LaMelo Ball, he was a highly regarded prospect. I mean, you all are out in California. Sure. You might have heard of him as a prep star. But he wasn't at that sort of level that Lamar was, or LaMelo, excuse me. And I mentioned Brandon Jennings on draft night. You know, even Brandon. Yeah. I mean, I had heard of Brandon in Chicago, you know, at sort of early internet days before he went to Italy. And he was a, you know, he played 20 minutes a game in Italy, at least, before he was drafted by the Bucks. So, yeah, Marcus and Chris, I think it was just as much of a surprise that he was the pick there. I think if you invert these picks, guys, like Tyler Smith at 23, AJ Johnson at 33, everyone's like, oh, that makes sense. I think it was just the fact that AJ went in the first round was maybe the thing that caught everybody off guard.
Jim, did you get a sense, or what type of sense did you get as far as from the Bucks' perspective as the position they're projecting AJ Johnson to fill, the role long term and in the short term? Did you get a sense of that?
Yeah, John Horst said that he could be a point guard, but he really leaned into the combo guard aspect. And Marcus, it was interesting you mentioned his free throw shooting percentage. Usually that's an indicator, right, of how well a guy may shoot, what kind of jump, you know, long range shot he has. And the reason I say that is because John kind of talked about him as a three level scorer at some point, as an in between guy who can make threes and someone who can attack and finish at the rim. So he said, look, he likes to get off the ball, be it in transition or quickly in a half court, likes to cut, things like that, Chris. So I think they view him as a multi-level scorer at 6'5", with elite speed down the line.
Wow. Okay.
That's how they project it out.
Okay.
Well, no, and again, you can get thrown off the track, and that's a lot of people online. You read the comments, and you know, and John Horst talked about, you know, with swinging, they say swinging for the fences. He made
big swing, big swing.
It's like swinging for the fences, you know. But you got to take a gamble on a guy like this at 23. The thing, Jim, and I don't know how much you've had a chance to deep dive into this, but I have. The thing that really blows me away is the way the game of basketball, and I sound like Mark Jackson or somebody, East Coast guy, the game of basketball, the way it opens up so many doors and opportunities for these young men. I didn't know anything about him until I talked to his high school coach, Jim, out here, Derek Taylor, Taft High School, a good friend of mine. And Derek started giving me some of his backstory. Say, I'm an actor, been in acting for 50 years. And so I'm always looking to see what motivates a player. What's the thing that motivates a guy? This young man, this kid, Jim, I mean, you know, Fresno, Hard Knock Life, he and Jalen Green, best buddies, Mike Hill, Chris is a guy that you know was his trainer and kind of, you know, consigliere, to use a term from The Godfather. But he grew up in some abject poverty, single parent home. Mom had him at a young age, I believe. And Mike Hill thought that Taft High School with Derek Taylor, because Derek was the guy that coached Jordan Farmar, coached Larry Drew Jr., coached the Hamiltons, Isaac and Daniel Hamilton, who never made it big time in the NBA, but great college players. But Mike Hill thought that Taft would be the good school for him. And Derek was just telling me how this young man came in as a sophomore, I believe, 6'2", 120 pounds, dripping wet. Didn't play his sophomore year because of COVID. Came back, played his junior year. But what he told me was that you know, they live from motel to motel, just one of those existences that you just can't even fathom. But he said that this young man, and I'm almost going to bust a tear here thinking about this, never brought any negative energy into the gym ever. Never talked about his dire circumstances. I always kept a positive mindset. Derek talked about his mother, not college educated, but introspective, and was the person that kind of helped fuel him. And he just talked about his work ethic, just lived in the gym, needed a lot of work, but he had a handle. He had a handle. He could dribble a basketball, and you could see it in the film. He could get to his spots, get where he wants to go. He slithers through small openings. And so from that standpoint, Jim, when I see that in a young man like this, first of all, I'm always so enamored for them and this the sudden riches that you come into, because his family needs it desperately. But I just think the Bucks have themselves a young man that's going to come in and going to fulfill every ounce of potential. Now, is this something that you had talked to any of the Bucks people about, you are aware of? What's your take on that?
Yeah, it's interesting, Marcus. No, we unfortunately, the timing of all this, we didn't get a chance to go deep dive into that. I mean, and that's great background and intel, and you know, those are on the list, like Tyler Smith's coaches and coming up. They're sort of on the okay. Yeah. When can we get a hold of these folks? What I will say is John Horst, several occasions mentioned the interview process with AJ. His thoughtfulness, his mentality, and the fact that, and I think this plays, so you just sort of educated all of us here on the high school aspect, then to decide to go to Australia. Look, he could have been a pro at Overtime Elite and in the G League Ignite, like his new teammate, Tyler, right? He could have done that. Yeah. He is young enough. It's the NIL. He could have a seven-figure deal playing at Texas, right? So there was a decision made there to go to a professional league. And I'm not – look, I understand there's levels to this, right? And if he were in Europe or, you know, one of those leagues, it's probably better, right, than with air quotes, than the NBL. But it's still a pro league, right? And and as John said, they learned something by the fact that he went there – and unlike a LaMelo, didn't play, didn't have the success maybe he thought, or maybe people sold him on, whatever that may be. And yet, you're right, right. No negative aspects or energy about that in terms of, you know, his communication about it and what he was bringing to the table in terms of the Bucks interviews and things of that nature, Marcus.
Yeah, and his coach said that his skill set was astounding as a 14, 15-year-old, and he just needed to clean up some things. He said he can over-dribble at times. He's really good off the bounce, but sometimes he can dominate the ball. Needs to be a little bit more efficient with that. But I was just really impressed with that. Go ahead, Chris.
No, I think the big thing, though, when you see this guy, you have to look at the NBL. So the NBL as a league, Jim, and you alluded to it, it may not be a top-tier league like those in Europe, but it is one of the most physical leagues in the world. So yeah, those guys will beat you up. Those guys, you know, those Australians, they don't play. As you saw with Alexander Sarr, his number, the second pick in the draft, Sarr's numbers were a little skewed. It wasn't as impressive as he was over in the against the G League team. You know, he looked great over here, but when he's over there in the NBL, it was hard to get a good read. I think the same thing happens with AJ. The thing I do remember Horst saying about Johnson was that he does have a defined elite skill set, and that is speed and athleticism. I saw him for the first time as a freshman out here at King Drew High School. He was playing on the AAU circuit. He was this 6'2", about 120, 125 at the time. But you saw like a long-legged, long-arm, bouncy, live, young dude. He was always been younger than everybody and played up. So he understands competition, and he also understands through Jalen Green how to be a pro. He knows how to work. He understands the mentality, the attitude. And so those are all the factors that I see in this young man to go along with the long arms and the potential. Like, dude, get him in the gym, lock him in the gym, shoot 1,000 shots a day, and the Bucks definitely will have them something very soon here.
I'm a big wingspan guy. He's got a 6'8 wingspan. And then, Chris, the Truth was a team that he played for, right? Paul Pierce's AAU team here in Los Angeles?
Yeah, for a real quick time. Yeah, it was the Truth. Yep.
Okay. But so Jim, I mean, you know, in terms of the Bucks and kind of the scuttlebutt out there, I mean, are people starting to appreciate this move, you think, or is it still a lot of pushback on, you know, we're a win now team, why would you, you know, swing big for the future?
Yeah, it's interesting, Marcus. It's sort of a split to a degree, because there is a segment of the fan base that is very concerned about 2030, you know, and the fact that the Bucks don't have a pick in 2025. They don't have a second round pick till 2031. You know, it's an older team. So look, to Chris's point, this athleticism, this elite speed, that's something that, you know, John Horst says, like, only Andre Jackson Jr. has that on the current roster. So there are, I think AJ maybe pacifies, if you will, that group of fans who are like, what are we going to do in 3 years? Now, for the Bucks, one, they're expecting to win a championship. Marcus, you're supposed to be on a boat, on a thing, whatever, down the parade
shirtless
in June, right? So
yeah. Right. This, take my shirt off and like,
swigging, you know,
shooting water.
Exactly.
I can't drink beer, but shooting water.
I don't know. Yeah, for some reason, I thought like the parade should go down the Milwaukee River. I think that'd be cool too. But anyway, tell Peter Pagan that for the next one. But like for the win now aspect, you're right. Like they don't look. I know people want to make comps to Tyrese Maxey. It's easy. Played under Doc. I think it's a little bit of apples to oranges. Tyrese was 200 pounds as a rookie.
Yeah.
He played 35 minutes a game at Kentucky as a freshman. I think the baseline there is different. And those Sixers weren't these Bucks, right? So I think for the win now fans, it is a little bit of, okay, we get it, but does that mean Andre Jackson Jr. starting next to Dame? Does that mean they only got a couple of free agent spots? Do they kind of have a good idea?
Marjan Beauchamp?
Yeah. Marjan or Andre, right? So is that what that means? So I think for the win now group, it is a little bit of, okay, like, let's see what else happens and then kind of make some assessments there.
You mentioned Tyrese Maxey. Quick Tyrese Maxey story. He played at the top 100 camp in Virginia, Chris, Jim, and he was on, my son Cyrus was on the same. When you're an NBA player, you get your kids in to that camp with no problem. So I got, you know, Cyrus kind of legacied into that camp. He may have had, he says it was more, but I say two buckets, the whole camp. Tyrese Maxey assisted on both of those. I always tell Tyrese Maxey, you know, I always remind him of that scenario and tell him, thank you so much. I got
good
one
looking
on video. Good looking. What I'm on video.
We like, appreciate you.
You hooked my son Cyrus up down there. Oh, yeah, I know Cyrus. How you doing? Like, he's doing good, man.
We appreciate
good. My comparison, again, Anfernee Simons, because I saw Anfernee Simons, and this is another story. I saw Anfernee Simons doing a pregame workout. It may have been the COVID year. I forget what year it was when he was a rookie. And it may have been COVID. But anyway, he's working out. He's got this handle. I mean, I'd never heard of him. You know, Anfernee, I know Anfernee Hardaway, a good friend of mine, worked together in Blue Chips and all that. And so that was a good story. But then I watched him with this handle get to his spots. He had a really smooth way of getting to his spots and a really solid shot. So I mentioned on the air that night that this was going to be a future star in this league. When we played Portland, when he was a rookie, he didn't play a lot. flash forward to this season, we're playing against the Blazers. He's hurt with the hurt hand or something going on, so he's not playing, but he's working out. But he's sitting down. I get introduced to him, and I tell him, "Man, look, I saw you as a rookie. I started blowing you up on the air, talking about how good." He's like, "Yeah, my mom and dad told me this Milwaukee announcer really likes your game, man. This Milwaukee announcer, all he did was just talk about how good you was gonna be. That was you, huh?" I was like, "Yeah, that was me, man." But hopefully now. We can't go, but real quick, Chris, we got to touch on this. The suit, the draft day suit. Any comments? I mean, it reminds me of that Carmelo, Kendrick Perkins, TJ, TJ's.
Ford, TJ Ford.
TJ Ford, TJ the big buy. But to me, but look, I like a young man who's out there taking fashion gambles, out there with, you know, just fashion risk. And just so that gives me an idea that he's got a sense of himself. He's comfortable with himself. When he had the big fluffy shoes on, Chris, I mean, that was a
confidence. Confidence is everything. Yeah. Confidence as a pro, you're going into the league. You're dressed like that. And not only did he have on the suit, the double breasted, the fluffy shoes, but he was sagging his suit. He kind of had a little flavor about him, man. I'm all over it. He was sitting in the big King's chair. He's just a great looking kid. He's well spoken. I mean, when he comes off and you listen to him, and he's really engaging. I mean, he has star written all over him, in my opinion. Like, I've seen a lot of guys, and this guy has a different kind of look in his eyes, man. So, but that's funny, MJ, you brought that up.
Jim, how'd you like the suit? Give me your fashion.
Look, I can appreciate all of that, especially Mark, because, you know, I mean, the guys, for the most part, yeah, there is the little like fashion walk pictures, but I mean, players don't have to wear that stuff anymore, right? It's usually like hoodies and sweats and, you know, so I that might be the only suit he ever wears again. So I think, I think if you're going to do it, do it like that.
Heck yeah.
Yeah, and when are we going to stop trying to fit a baseball cap on like these big, huge, ginormous, you know, the baseball cap just barely hanging on. But I guess it's just a tradition that you just can't let go of. But we wish him all the best. And again, just quickly back to his high school. So he played his junior year at Taft High School, played for Derek Taylor. And then his senior year, he was convinced to move out to Simi Valley, Chris, Jim, to play for Donda, the Donda Academy. That was Kanye West had opened up a new academy out here in Southern California. And then it shut down. It closed down. So he's been through some stuff, some disappointments, and to continue to have. And the one thing Derek Taylor said was that he is no energy vampire. He's not going to suck the air, the energy out of the room with his, you know, it's all about me and look at me and all this stuff. I need attention, high need, all that stuff. That he is just such a really well-balanced kid, and especially considering what he's been through.
Hey, real quick, I just wanted to get Jim's thoughts finally on AJ. Do you think that, like, how much time do you think he'll spend in the G League this year, Jim, as opposed to the big club? Like, will he, you know, go down? Like, you get any sense of that?
I mean, I can only go by the history of the team. And Marjon Beauchamp, Chris Livingston, I guess players you might most recently compare. I think Andre Jackson Jr., national champion, three-year starter at UConn, no real need for him to go play with the Herd. But Livingston and Beauchamp did kind of spend that time, right, going back and forth, getting minutes. I do think they want AJ around Dame. You know, I think they for sure. I mean, you know, Marcus just went on the kind of told us about Anthony Simons. I mean, that's literally Dame, the under the wing thing. Bring Anthony in and really mentor that young man off the court as well as the on the court stuff. So I think the Bucks have to find that balance. Like, he's probably going to play more for sure with the Herd. And it's just, okay, what's more valuable in this moment? Getting a couple practices in with the Herd, because as you all know, the Bucks aren't going to practice very much once the season begins, versus the bus trips, the plane rides, the team dinners on the road with the vets, right? So I think that'll be the usual push and pull that the Bucks face with these young guys.
Yeah, well, we're looking forward to just kind of watching him grow and develop. And the one thing that he has is some time on his side. I mean, you can be patient with a young man like this, and it's good to go to a veteran team that you don't need his contributions to be successful. And so there's no pressure, and it's all about, you know, advancing and getting better and development at your own speed, at your own time. And we're not locked in trying to get you there this year. We need you this year. So, From that standpoint, I think it's an excellent pick, and my mind has been changed from that initial that initial draft day kind of like, who, what, now what's going on here? Let me do a deeper dive to find out. And once I did that, I fully understand why the Bucks and the guys who make the decisions were so enamored with this young man. So now, and a lot of people have said this, that you know, you could almost swap the first and the second round, and it would make more sense. But Tyler Smith.
With the 33rd pick in the 2024 NBA draft, the Milwaukee Bucks select Tyler Smith from Houston, Texas, and the NBA G League's Team Ignite.
Talk about Tyler Smith, the Bucks' second round pick at 33, Jim. What do you know about him?
Yeah, so Tyler, you know, played domestically, right? Started at Overtime Elite in Atlanta. And then the G League team, the Ignite, which he's the last one. I mean, his team is the last one. They're disbanding that now. They didn't win a whole lot. I think 2-35. I mean, terrible.
7-45.
Okay, it was not great. But yeah. But what Tyler did
not great. Not great.
Oh man, dang! You throw my boy Jay Hart under the bus, MJ.
I mean, it's
dang, you know, MJ. Throwing Jay Hart under the bus.
7-45.
Man.
But it's all about, you know,
they just needed 37 more games, Marcus. They would have figured out.
7-45. But go ahead. Sorry, I digress.
No, so Tyler, obviously, same concept, right, as the NBL. Like, the G League is full of, you know, either NBA players, you know, like Glenn Robinson III, for instance, was playing on the Herd. Chris Livingston, Marjon Beauchamp, guys like that, other younger prospects, you know, that are getting ready for the league, if not already in it. And so what Tyler showed, I think, that the Bucks really liked was an offensive shot. Like, he projects as a true four or traditional power forward ish. You know, I think he's 6'9" without shoes. No one plays barefoot. So what, 6'10", almost 6'11", 7 foot wingspan. So there's some like rim protection, potential there, but also real athletic. I mean, he's got the same vertical as AJ Johnson at 38 inches. You know, some of his combine measurables were pretty quick. So they think he can get out and switch, you know, out on the perimeter if need be, which obviously the league is moving in that direction. I think 37% guys on catch and shoot threes. So kind of your floor spacing offensive player. His around the rim stuff, not great. But again, you're talking about a 19-year-old. So, you know, there's always going to be room to work. Room to improve things, and I think that's probably one area. Milton Newton mentioned finally that he's another guy, add some more weight. You know, and again, you know, kind of looking at a year or two or two or three down the line.
Yeah, it feels like, you know, with these two picks, the Bucks really, they gambled on some guys that they feel like are going to hit. Like, Tyler was the top 10 recruit coming out. He took a unique path, but he's been on a development path. Same with AJ. My point about that development path, when you're young, 17, 18, and you're playing against older guys, pros, you're getting better exponentially faster. And so now when you're in your third year of your development plan, like Smith, like AJ, it's like, that's a year that they could really turn a corner. Like, you make a jump between year two, year three, year four in your development. I feel like that Horst has some foresight and some, like, looking out in the future, a gamble move on this. It's amazing, because if these two guys hit and they live up to their actual potential, they realize their true potential as players, I mean, he's going to look like a genius.
Yeah, I mean, and look, and that's, I think, their bet to a degree, right? You know, what better group to learn on as the rosters we record this. If you're Tyler Smith, you know, I feel like Giannis is a hard guy to try to feel like you can be like, because he's one of one. But look at Bobby. I mean, Bobby's a 6'10", a guy who, you know, developed a 3-point shot in the NBA, right? And a guy who has improved defensively, right? With, maybe he doesn't have those athletic traits, as Bobby says, you know, I'm not the one blocking shots, you know, my vertical is none, you know, whatever, you know, self-deprecating BP. But, like, you know, they've got some guys that Tyler and AJ can kind of look at and say, okay, I see myself there to a degree. But Chris, to your point, look, they don't have a ton of picks, and you do hope for a rotation player, and maybe you see the framework of an all-star, right? And you do have to hope, if you're the Bucks, that development plan, as you said, whether it be for Tyler Smith, who is now a third or fourth year pro, or an AJ who's now a second year pro, that getting into the NBA system where you don't practice as much, where you have more free time, where the coaches, let's be real, like Doc may like these guys, but Doc's got to make sure Chris is ready to go and Marjan's ready to go.
Right.
It's a little different, but that's the game. That's the draft. Is you're projecting out and hoping they can get to what they see.
And so, what I like to do, and we all like to do it, but I always try and figure out who this guy reminds me of a little bit. I talked about Anthony Simons with AJ Johnson, and so I pulled up some video on Tyler Smith. Went to Synergy. Thank you, Matthew Curley over at Synergy, for providing
Matt
with shout out to Matt. Hey, we got to give Matt a all
right, Matt. Thank you, brother.
All right. So, but you know, Chris and Jim, I want your take on this. He reminds me. Okay, big 6'9", 6'10", lefty with some range.
Don't say Sam Perkins.
No, he's more mobile than Sam Perkins. But Terrence Jones.
Do you remember Terrence Jones? From Kentucky. Went to Kentucky.
Out of Jefferson High School in Portland, played with Terrence Ross in high school and Aaron Miles and all those guys out of that state. But that Terrence Jones, kind of that big, mobile, left-handed 6'9", really good athleticism. But the one thing, and so there's a reason why a young man like this with all these measurables, as they say, lasted till the 33rd pick. So I watched some video. He's got to work on. He's not as explosive as you would like off of 2 feet in the paint in a crowd. So thus you've got the 49.7% of his layups that he only made this year. He goes to his right hand line. He's a lefty, sweet lefty jumper. I love lefty jump shooters, sweet lefty jumper. But he goes to his right hand a lot. And again, he's got that great running vert, which was like 38 inches. I think the standing vert was like 27, 28 or something like that. And so he gets that right hand. So when you get him, in a sedentary position, you let him get downhill, he gets that runway, the takeoff, he's jumping in the cup. But in a crowd where he's sedentary, now he's got to explode up. He's not quite as effective. So he's got to figure out kind of where his buckets are going to get in those kind of scenarios. But that's the reason why, as a cutter, he was in the 24th percentile, which is below average. Transition, he was excellent, and the spot up, really, really good. He's really, really good post-ups, which I was happy to see. But, he's not a finished product, thus the 33rd pick, so there's got to be some work put in. But I do like the potential and the aggressive mindset offensively. He's looking to score pretty much every time he gets the basketball. So I don't know, Jim, you got any input on that?
Yeah. Well, I mean, look, it's again, you are, as Chris mentioned, you're sort of betting on the potential of what they could be. And of course, everyone's looking for the Hall of Fame comp or the All NBA comp. I actually respect wildly that you brought up a guy, Terrence Jones, who played 7 years in the league as a rotation.
Yeah, best season average 12-7. Yeah. I mean, he had a couple of years of double figure. It's double figure for his career, 10-6 or something like that, which is solid.
That's not always what fans want to hear necessarily, but the math is that if these picks can get to that point, that you're a solid NBA player, right? And you're in the league into a second contract, which is a huge victory, like it when you zoom out, and what the hope is that maybe some of those things either pop or there is a next level that the team believes is there, and now it's up to them to pull it out of that player.
Yeah, well, and the fact that you talked about AJ Johnson being placed under the wing of a Dame Lillard. I mean, if you get Tyler Smith and Giannis hooked up and Giannis takes a liking to him and he gets on that, developmental curve that Giannis has put some of these young players on with him, and just the confidence instilled going against the two-time MVP and workouts and during the offseason or during the season or before practice, I just think those kinds of connections for a young man like this will be invaluable. Other thing I like about him, he's a New Orleans kid. And I love, I want to do a documentary on this, Chris. Maybe somebody's done it already. But there's been so many really good Hurricane Katrina displacees that grew up in New Orleans. He was, you know, he was a year when the hurricane hit. But DJ Augustine, Greg Monroe, a lot of these guys moved from New Orleans to Houston to go to high school in Houston or the Dallas area. So it's just fascinating to me how, you know, these guys have to uproot their family. So whether or not he was impacted personally because he was so young, but you know his family, his mom and dad. I mean, again, this is another story of I don't know how much they struggle, if they struggle, but just the fact you've got to uproot, you know, your whole deal and move to a whole new area, a whole new city. To me, it's just kind of fascinating. So we'll see how it plays out. But I'm looking forward to watching these two young men develop and work and live in the gym and do their thing. All right. Here, District, we've got Jim Ozarski. Going to take a brief pause for the cause. And we'll be right back with more of the Fantastic Voyage. I'm the captain of this vessel, y'all. Don't go nowhere.
You're listening to a Bucks Plus audio production.
All right. Welcome back to the Here District. Marcus Johnson, Chris Johnson, joined by Jim Ozarski. I mean, and you talk about a bunch of consonants that just twist your mind off. I got these O-C-Z-W-A-Z-P-C-K.
Legendary, legendary, legendary.
It's like Ozarski, very real simple. Just spell it like spell it like it sounds.
One of the best moments back when Twitter was fun, I actually had someone tweet at Raekwon, the chef, if he could rhyme my last name. And I mean, all he replied was LOL. And that's all I needed.
Oh, my goodness.
I screenshot it forever. You know what I mean?
Hey, Jim, I noticed in your bio that you're a Wu-Tang fan. Now, just real quickly on that, man. Talk to me about the Wu, because I'm a Wu-Tang fan too. But talk to me about that, man. Okay, where'd you get on the Wu?
But before you do, Jim Ozarski doesn't speak Farsi. Okay. Anyway, go ahead.
I don't know if the deal is coming for you on that one, Marcus.
All right.
Yeah. Hey. I'm from Chicago originally, but the 36 Chambers coming out, and I was in high school in '96. So yeah, and I remember it was just a friend of mine. It was like, have you heard? You have to listen to this, and it's one of those records that just, you know, I'm 14-15 years old, just like blew my mind, right? And the Wu-Tang Clan is.
Have you met any of those guys?
No, not personally. No, unfortunately. Trivia question though, I was at the Chicago concert, my first concert ever, that they were opening a Rage Against the Machine. Grantland wrote a big thing about it. It was their last concert with the full original lineup. They kind of had some disputes on that tour. They're supposed to go back to New York for like the Hot 97 Summer Jam, and they kind of broke up then. And then I actually saw them again when they came back and did an anniversary tour, 36 Chambers. Yeah, it's an incredible group.
That's dope.
Yeah.
Man, okay. MJ, quick Wu-Tang story for Jim. I was in New York summer 2011 hanging out with my old coach, Steve Lavin, who used to be the head coach at UCLA. He's now the head coach of San Diego. It was his birthday. So I think we're at the Mondrian or somewhere in Soho, somewhere ritzy, and we're hanging out. And then as we walk in to sit down for dinner, man, right to my right is the RZA. It's the RZA. The RZA is in the building. So I go over to him. I say, hey, RZA, can you come wish Coach Lavin a happy birthday? And then he comes over to the table, man, wishes Lavin a happy birthday. It was a dope moment, but he's real cool dude, man. Real cool.
One regret I have is I did have a chance. RZA did a project with Paul Banks for Banks and Steels, I think a record ahead of his time in 19. And he did a concert in Chicago. I had a chance to go, but I was living in Cincinnati at the time. And I did not make the Fantastic Voyage for that date and reference market. I did not make that. I still regret that. I do so much.
For sure.
Now, help me out, guys. Did you guys watch the series about the Wu? And I always pronounce Wu Tang. I want to say Wu Tang. Is it Wu Tang? Is it Tang or
with
Tang?
Who was it with?
No, it was a show called the Wu Tang: An American Saga on Hulu.
Yeah, it was
came out about two or three years ago.
Yeah.
Goodness, but who was that lead actor, the skinny dark skinned brother? He's been in a lot of good stuff, Chris.
Okay, I don't remember his name.
Which band member, rap group member, did he play? Bobby, his name was, Bobby in the show?
Are you thinking Bobby Digital, aka the
Bobby
RZA?
Digital? Yeah. Bobby, it's the RZA. Yeah. Bobby Digital. He's Bobby Digital. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, okay. But well, I'm saying this actor, though, just did a, I mean, I fell in love with this actor just from his portrayal of that character in that biographical drama. So if you haven't seen that, people, you're a Wu-Tang Clan fan. Who we got? We got the Raekwon the Chef. We got Method Man. We got, help me out. It's about
the RZA. The RZA.
About 30 of these brothers, man.
The RZA. The Jizza. Capadella. Tony Starks. Ghostface Killer.
Yeah.
You got some other guys you never heard of. You got some other guys you never heard of.
I got all. I have all those records. Right where RZA says is like. You know, get your individual deals, but as a group, like, I mean, record breaking stuff. Yeah, I've got all those. Yeah, yeah.
Yes,
yeah,
sir.
I think RZA was on one of my favorite shows. I want to say Californication. I believe he was on there toward the end of Californication.
Okay.
With David Duchovny.
And, I love that show.
Yeah. He played a real, like, edgy, kind of, you know, over the top kind of character, but he was really, really good. So I appreciate all that. Anyway, where are we going with this? Oh, and so this is a great segue. Greece and Giannis. Giannis played his first game. Giannis played his first game since when, Jim? When did he get hurt? Boston?
Yeah, April 9th at Pfizer Forum against Boston.
Now, what was your personal feeling when, because it's been a lot of pushback, and we've talked about this, about him playing, you know, international basketball after the issues that he had with that soleus yeah. muscle above the calf or below the calf or whatever it was. What's your feeling about that?
Yeah, I mean, at first you'd like to think that Bucks fans are Bucks fans and they would be saying these similar things if Giannis was playing for Team USA. But look, Greece has not been to the Olympics in men's basketball since 2008. They've never medaled. It's clearly something Giannis feels very strongly about. It's one of his career goals, is to get Greece into the Olympics. You know, without him, last summer he had knee surgery. They did not automatically qualify, so they've got to kind of go through this little tournament here, which really the only impediment is Luka Doncic's Slovenian team. So we'll see how Luka is going to play. And if Luka and the Slovenians win, then Giannis's summer's over and he can train. But if Greece wins, he's going to be part of that, the whole Olympic game for about a month or so in Paris.
Will Slovenia be in if they lose? Are they in already?
No,
they need to win? Is it a must-win situation?
Ooh, okay. And obviously Luka has been in shape and just got done with the finals. We'll see what he's got left in the tank. Slovenia is a pretty good team as it is. So not to discount the other teams in this qualifier, but those are really the two guys. But I would say in general, though, Marcus, Giannis is going to have to play. Like, and you know, everyone knows this. We may not see it. They might not put it on Instagram, but NBA players are getting their runs in. And they're playing against dudes. Now, what makes FIBA different is there are stakes. There are, and it's a physical game. Whereas the run in LA, you know, guys aren't going to knock you down when you go to the rim, right? They're going to let you finish safely. That's not the case.
Great point.
Yeah. So that'll be the concern for fans. But I think in general, look, he's going to play. He's got to play. And I think it's good that he's healthy enough to do so.
Yeah, quick story about the runs in L.A. So Chris is playing against Kobe Bryant, and Kobe's what, in this after his first year. Chris, I love this story. And so they're going at each other. Chris is holding his own. Kobe's holding his own. Kobe's like all of, what, 18, 19 years old, both of them. But Chris, he's about, what, a year younger than you or something like that? Or
Kobe like 17, 18,
17, 18. And so Kobe, I'm right there, and I'm there, Jim. I'm there watching Magic. Everybody's there. Men's gym, full pack. And so Chris guarding Kobe. Chris does something. Kobe calls a foul. So Chris is like, that ain't no foul. That's a bunch of BS. He used the word, just bull flink, you know, bull feathers. And so Kobe's like, that's a foul. So Chris is like, Chris started talking to him. You know, and so Kobe was like, I ain't afraid of you. I ain't afraid of you. So Chris starts coming at him, you know. And so Magic's on the sideline going, Chris. Kobe, come on, y'all. Chris, come on now. Chris, Kobe. And I'm on the sideline because I know my son, Jim, and I know that if he breaks Kobe Bryant's jaw. No, I'm just saying, if he would have swung on Kobe Bryant, he would have been the most vilified man in Los Angeles. He'd been canceled. He'd been like,
well, I was a competitor, but Jim, what my dad did tell you, so I after all that happened, it was one of my most like eat crow moments of my life. Like, so after I like try to, you know, get punk Kobe and get into it with him, the very next play down, this dude catches a tip dunk on me, and I fall. I look up at my dad; he kind of looks the other way. It's just like it was a karma. It was a karma moment, Jim.
Yeah. And I was there, Jim. I'm like, Chris, man. He's like, you stay out of it, Dad. Stay out of it, Dad. This ain't got nothing to do with you, Dad. I was like, oh boy, here we go. I didn't want my son.
Those were the days.
Get canceled.
Those were the days.
Do we know if Marjan and Andre Jackson Jr., do we know if they're still over in Greece? Or, I guess they've broken camp kind of. Maybe they're probably back by now.
I think they're back. For fans, Giannis, the younger guys tend to be the group that goes to Greece with Giannis early. Obviously, he's not with the Greek national team. They're competing. They're training. So the Bucks players had to come back. Right. I guess they could have hung out there for vacation for a little bit, but I think they're getting their work in. And it's end of June, summer league starting in a couple of weeks. So they had to get themselves back in, you know, their domestic sea legs, if you will. But it's always a fun thing for those younger guys to get over. I know everyone sort of wants to know about the vets and the coaches. I think sometimes that stuff happens a little more under the radar. They're not as sort of out there with their business.
I'm telling you,
it happened one summer, August, September, when there's that real true break for them.
See, one summer, Giannis needs to take the color commentator over there. I mean, have you seen his spread, Chris, at the top of the hill overlooking the Acropolis or whatever it is? I mean, he's got this beautiful, beautiful spot, and I just know he's got it laid out over in Greece. And I'm sure I can just imagine, you know, how great of an experience it is for these young guys to be hanging with Giannis and Antetokounmpo in Greece.
It's unbelievable. And the work you get to get in, I think the work is like the biggest part of it all. Like to be able to work out with this dude and get that intensified work in a small group or whatever it is, and that up close and personal attention, man. I mean, it's really a wonderful team building deal.
It is. Again, Marcus, you know this, Chris, you know this, like an NBA practice, if they do it at all, I mean, you're getting into your big group or your guards group or your skeleton and your five, like, so, you know, yeah, they're together, but they're not like together. So yeah, to be able to, to have that sort of really, really tight knit individual attention, and maybe there's some other kind of pros over there where they can get a run in. But you're right. It's really just them. I mean, Giannis doesn't have a huge circle, right? So it's a pretty tight thing. But Marcus, I think, you know what? I think he should take you because, as far as I know, team broadcasters would not count as like some sort of salary cap issue. Like Giannis can't pay for all of this because like they don't want, you know, they feel like those things can be.
Right.
Oh, wow. But I think the podcast can work. So I'll vouch for you with that one, I think.
Appreciate you.
Let's talk to Johnny Watson and Peter Fagan and make that happen next.
Let's
summer.
Do it, baby.
Yeah, no, let's do that. But Giannis, we talk about this yet? I'm having so much fun. We talk about the first game against the Bahamas. Giannis had 6 fouls and 14. Heck, Murdoch Award goes to 6 fouls and 14 minutes. You know, Jim, come on, what's up?
That's an interesting way to fulfill your minute restriction. Like, if you wanted any doubt, like if you wanted to take that and just make sure you couldn't come back in, you'll fall out.
Yeah, that's the way to do it.
I'm out.
All right, so now what's been in the news, and my son Josiah had a great tweet. He talked about the recent debate and how that stole all the luster from Bronny James's big day. You know, the debate kind of, you know,
overshadowed Bronny,
rained on his parade. But Bronny James is a Laker. I don't think that's a shock to any of us. They picked him at 55. And it's not like they picked him at, you know, 28 or 32 or whatever. I mean, 55, you're getting into the Mr. Irrelevant area of the last pick in the draft. And I'm not in the minority. I've heard a couple other guys say it, but I just like the skill set defensively, first of all, But when you think about, we talked about Giannis and the benefit of these guys working out with Giannis, who goes at it harder than anybody. But to be able to work out with LeBron, you know, 24/7, to be on the same nutritional program, any other program that he might be on, may not be on, but you're on all these elite level training programs, and you know what I mean, Chris? I mean, can you imagine?
LeBron spends $1 million a year on his body, right? On his strength, conditioning, his oxygen and his blood, his nutrition. So you mean to tell me that Bronny and Bryce aren't getting the same treatment?
Yeah.
Look, I know we, you know, there's been a lot of scuttlebutt about nepotism and, you know, Bronny's taking a slot from someone more deserving. I disagree. I think Bronny is deserving to be the 55th pick in the draft. We're not talking about lottery, not talking about first round. You're not even talking about early second round. You're talking about one of the last picks of the draft. No one really remembers the 55th guy. There's only been like four dudes or five dudes ever that have really balled out in these type of picks. So, you know, I understand it's LeBron. So you're going to be up in arms and there's going to be that natural hater rate. But gosh, for me, this is a kid that had a cardiac arrest situation and is a great kid. And he came back and he did his best and he's humble. See, the thing, he's not some spoiled NBA player's son as far as what I get from Bronny. So for me, I just don't know. I don't really like how people hate on him a lot because he doesn't strike me as a bad dude. What you think about the whole situation, Jim?
Yeah, I mean, well, clearly this was going to happen, right? As soon as it became clear that LeBron James Jr. could play again, which in and of itself is a tremendous thing for him. And who knows what his long-term prospects are health-wise, right? Like if this was one of those things where they don't know if he can play professional sports till he's 30, do this now, right? But that aside, you're right. I mean, like it's the nepotism thing is as Woj said on the broadcast. I mean, it's from ownership down to, you know, equipment level guys and front office people. Like, so that is what it is. I mean, what better pod to be on to talk about this? Like Marcus, like, think about that. Seriously, like Marcus, like what would, and Chris, what would that have been like if Marcus is at the end of, you're playing in LA with the Clippers and they could draft Chris? Like, what, like, hey, that's cool as hell. Like, even just as a storyteller for me. And I couldn't imagine.
Yeah. Don't do it, Chris. Don't do it. Don't do it, Chris. Don't do it.
Now I can see from the Suns' perspective, it from LeBron James, for Bronny, it is going to be tough. Like you're already carrying your father's namesake. You are now on the same team. You are now on a team that expects to win titles. These are all things he can't control that is now thrust upon him that no other player ever has had this. So, but again, he didn't choose that, but he did choose to be a basketball player. So, you know, I think that's the one hard part about it all, but I think it's great in general.
Well, and I understand your point about it being tough. And by the way, that actor I was talking about, his name is, I want to get that played RZA, is Ashton Sanders. Okay. He was in Moonlight, a bunch of Judas and the Black Messiah, Native Son. Did a lot of good stuff. Ashton Sanders, really good. I had to give him that shout out. Great job, Ashton Sanders. Thank you, Ashton Sanders. Did a tremendous job. Thank you. But to your point, I mean, so I'm reading something about somebody, and the name is it David Tellum?
Yeah, John Tellum.
Detroit. Detroit.
Okay, so I see David Tellum. I go, Tellum. Okay, got his son a gig. Okay, Malone, the coach is Denver. Brendan Malone is one of the best assistants in the history. Detroit Pistons, Chuck Daly. Yeah, you could just go on down the list of guys, the Bickerstaff and Wes Unseld Jr. and.
It's the NBA, but it's the NBA. This is normal practice in the NBA. It's its own entity. That's why I try to explain to people, you can't look at the NBA like it's some regular place, like some regular, regular job, like you're hired at Ford. Oh, he's hiring his son. It's not the same thing. They move with their own set of rules, just like they can hire J.J. Redick with no coaching experience and just not bat an eye. It's the NBA way. So that's the part of it that kind of bothers me. You got to look at it in context. This is the NBA, man. This isn't some regular job.
You talk about Bronny and how tough it is. And but this kid's been through heart issues, open heart surgery. This It's been tough on him. Chris will tell you, we had a whole show, Jim, a couple of episodes ago, and my sons were all on there, Josiah and Joshua, who's a tremendous young actor now for BET and Tyler Perry. But it's always going to be tough. I mean, that road is just going to be tough normally. And the thing is that Bronny, if it doesn't work out, you best believe he'll be vice president of the Clutch Sports within five. You know, he's got a pretty nice safety net to fall back on. So from that standpoint, I think he'll be fine. I think he's gonna surprise some people.
Yeah, and that's the thing. I mean, we started this podcast talking about Bucks picks and developing. Chris mentioned this, the historical stats of picks that late. Look, he's going to play a lot of G League games. You would think that's the only place he's really going to play. Obviously, I'm curious if they're going to get the play together thing out of the way, like the opening night.
Yeah,
you know, just sort of like let's do it right away, and so there's not anticipation type of thing.
Yeah, yeah. With Jeannie Buss sitting at that midcourt. Jeannie Buss, whose dad was a pretty popular runner in the NBA. We're talking nepotism. Since we're talking nepotism, let's not forget that.
Like the basketball.
Let's not leave that out. Yeah,
you know the basketball side of it. I think once all of that is over with, and not to rush that process for Bronny, but I think that'll be the one thing. It's like, okay, we've got through summer league, got through training camp and the preseason games, and then the first game playing together. And then, because look, LeBron wants to win a title, right? And
sure,
while I think he had that tweet a couple years ago, like Bronny's better than, nah, I mean, he'll realize pretty quick, I think, that no, Bronny needs to get his game developed. The Lakers need to do their thing with their new head coach. But in general, though, yeah, I got Chris, you're right. The NBA is a different kind of league in that way. Obviously, we've seen it in Milwaukee to a degree with not just Giannis and Thanasis and Alex in the organization, but I think, you know, this team, the Bucks have had, I mean, look at the Dunleavys to some degree. I don't think Mike Jr. Mike Jr. played here after, but whatever. Like it all happens.
Yeah.
And, I think good for them on a human level, though, for sure.
And I think the biggest, like Jim, you just alluded to it. One of the biggest gripes that people have about this particular situation is that LeBron was outspoken tweeting and putting on Instagram that Bronny's better than some of these guys before Bronny was ready, Jim. Like that is probably 90% of why everybody is so disgusted, or people are expressing disgust about this move, because they saw it coming. That was a level of disrespect associated with that when you're saying a guy that hasn't earned it yet is better than guys that have already proven it. So I think that has factored into it. Unfortunately, Bronny, and to MJ, to your point about having to go through this stuff and having to deal with it. I mean, imagine being Bronny James and, you know, going on social media any day of your life and reading all that stuff. So you develop a thick skin. Right. You develop a certain type of immunity to certain things in your mind. And I think he's laser focused. I think he's going to get better quick, and he's going to be all right. I don't know. I just really don't know if he's going to be a sustainable NBA guy yet. Okay. I gotta see.
Yeah, we gotta see. But he does bring to mind a couple of pet peeves of mine. We're going to wrap it up pretty soon. But that first pet peeve is that Bronny was listed at 6'4". They measured him at the combine at 6'1.5". And so I've always been one that I wanted to be taller. I wanted to be 6'7", you know. So
me too.
Like 6'5.75". When I was a freshman at Southport, UCLA, measured at 6'5.5" as a freshman. Sophomore kind of got on my toes a little bit in the measuring line.
Good job.
So they got me at 6'6.25". And my teammate, the late great Gavin Smith, is like, he was 6'6", legit. He's like, you're not taller than me. I was like, well, I was then. My daughter Shiloh, 5'11.5", when she took her physical, I told her, get on your toes a little bit, be 6 feet, be a 6-footer, you know. And so that's always something. When we played against the Sixers, Jim, Chris, I had like 13 or 14 rebounds my rookie year, had a great game. And George McGinnis in the paper said, yeah, he rebounds really well for a guy that's 6'4". And man, that just ate me. Man, you talk about something that just steams.
George McGinnis.
George McGinnis. Yeah. So he rebounds really well for a 6'4 guy. But the other thing, the other pet peeve of mine, and Jim, you are partly a contributor to this, is the term point forward. Now, nothing irks me more, Chris, Jim, that when look, I don't claim to be the first point forward, Jim, right, Chris. I just claim to be the guy that invented the term. I told you over and over again, 1984, the playoffs against the New Jersey Nets, their pressure, Darwin Cook, Michael Ray Richardson, Mike Dunleavy Jr. was getting spun around every time. Or my teammate, every time he bought the ball, Mike Dunleavy Sr., every time he bought the ball up the floor, and Nelly said, MJ, we need you to relieve the pressure. You bring it up. Here's how we're going to run our offense. And I said to Nelly, instead of a point guard, I'm a point forward. Now, since I've said that, you've had Dale Harris, Peter Vesey, all these guys, Johnny Johnson said, I think he said Lenny Wilkins invented that term. Now, look, Johnny Johnson, great point forward for the Supersonics with Gus Williams, Dennis Johnson coming off of screens. I guarded Johnny. I know how good he was in the position. Robert Reed played the position with Alan Lovell and Calvin Murphy and Mike Newland, those great guards down in Houston. Maurice Stokes played the position in the early to mid-60s. You watch some old footage of Maurice Stokes, and he's pushing and handling and dishing and diming. Rick Barry, one of the greatest point forwards of all time. My only claim to fame, and I told Paul Pressey this. You know, Paul Pressey, Jim, was, if you look up Missouri Valley Conference all-time point guards, you'll see Paul Pressey's name listed on there. So now Paul Pressey gets implemented as the point forward after I leave. He's a point guard, for Christ's sake. How tough is it if you're a point guard? How tough is it, Chris, if you're a point guard? And look, I give credit to Paul Pressey for taking the position and making it his own. But my only claim to fame, Jim, and I know you've gotten a lot, Dale Harris, a lot of pushback from these guys saying, so my thing is always, well, look, I say that I invented it in May of 1984, that term. I came up with the term. Just find me a public record of someone using that term before May of 1984. You're not going to be able to do it, Jim. But you speak to what you've unearthed in your voluminous research. You got about 30 seconds. Yeah, let's go.
No, I mean, don't take your time. Marcus, I'm just messing with you. You mentioned 84 and at the Journal Sentinel. Yeah, we did do, you know, a couple part series on this because of your coming up with the phrase. And it is true. Like that, publicly, Don Nelson, I think, is the one who went, like, was quoted as that. Right. But you're right. It didn't exist before then. 40 years. Right. Since 84.
Yeah.
The spring. So that was the reason why we did that. And obviously, Giannis, I think at one point, you know, I don't know what you call him now. And when he was 6'9", I think they thought Larry Drew, I remember thinking, you know, when they drafted him, like, oh, in that vein, right, of someone who can relieve pressure. But yeah, it's 4 decades. And if you think about now in positionless basketball, we talk about LeBron, I think for a time, you know, he fit that mold, Marcus. So no, that's a credit to your imagination, but also the skill set. Right. And then you need coaches.
Right.
You mentioned all those other players, you know, coaches along the line that were back then. Hubie Brown talked about this, guys, like a player may have a skill set, but you're just the player. You need the coach to allow these things to happen or to break some boundaries to a degree. Right. So Don Nelson, he's in the Hall of Fame for a reason. Del Harris is in the Hall of Fame for a reason. Right. Marcus probably should get there soon. For a reason, right? And along with Rick Barry, et cetera. So, yeah, it was fun to look back on. I definitely recommend people to check it out and, you know, hear what Marcus had to say.
I think it's unique that with the, MJ, when you list some of these other guys, that's like how much time they actually spent running the guard, the lead guard position. And then the fact that you were enlisted to do this and it not really being your primary skill set. I mean, I think that resonates. Like when I see guys that are point forwards, it's not like, oh, he used to play point guard in high school and now he just has the skill set. No, it's like I'm a legit small forward that has a handle. And like Boris Diaw to an extent, like, you know, you're like this guy that can dribble and set up, but it's not like you were born to do that. To me, that's the true essence of a point forward. Like LeBron, as good as a point forward as LeBron is, like, I've been torn on this because I know LeBron played a lot of one growing up and he was always on the ball. But is he truly a point forward? Is LeBron just like a big old point guard? Like, anyway, I digress.
Well, and it's interesting. When I was with the Clippers of all teams, Don Chaney, my coach at the time, the great Don Chaney, Don Duck Chaney, love him to death. Don Chaney, give him a little shout out. Duck. Don Chaney. Duck, 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 duck. But so with the Clippers, I think Norm Nixon may have been holding out or not in camp or something. And so Sam McManus, that's my you know Sam McManus of the LA Times, Jim.
I don't know the name.
Sam.
I don't know Sam was
back. He's back in the '80s. So yeah, you wouldn't know him. He's hopefully long gone by now. But Sam would do all these exposés and all this stuff. But when Don Chaney was asked by Sam McManus, well, you know, what are you guys going to do for the point guard position? And Don Chaney was like, well, look, you know, we've got some options, and one of those, you know, Marcus Johnson is an excellent ball handler, played the position in with the Milwaukee Bucks at times, and so I'm going to use Marcus as a point guard. And Sam McManus, you know, writers are not supposed to have editorial opinions on stuff, but Sam McManus, the next sentence says, who does he think he is, Magic Johnson? You know, who does he think he has? Magic Johnson?
Wow. Come on.
You know, yeah. But anyway, so that's why it's a sticking point, but it's all good. You know, I appreciate the contribution that I had to the position, and you know, it's been all good. But Giannis, back to Giannis. So talk about, again, I gave you my rap lyric, Ozarski and doesn't speak Farsi. But Giannis, you talked about, what do you call him? I got the perfect name. I got the perfect name. PowerPoint forward.
PPF.
PowerPoint forward. PowerPoint. See, PowerPoint point forward. Anyway. All right, Jim. Look, man, we appreciate you hanging out with us. We're going to let you go. We can keep you here all afternoon, man. Thank you so much for your great insights, man. Thank you for all the great work you do. Thank you for sharing with me some of the great work that you do to make my broadcast easier. And we'll see you. Are you going to Vegas for the summer league?
To be determined.
Okay. Okay. Same thing. Yeah. TBD. But we thank you, man, and we got to get you back on the show and get more of this good stuff, man. Thanks so much, Jim Ozarski, Marcus Johnson, the captain, Chris. I was gonna say Chris Middleton, Chris Johnson, the the first mate, Chris Johnson, the first mate, and this is the Fantastic Voyage. This is Here District, and we will see you the next time out.
This has been a Bucks Plus audio production.